Good morning and welcome to day 39. We have 10 days to go. Today is called Waking with the Sun and Your Ancestors. So we'll get into today's fun. So we're going to start with the elevator breath and we're just going to work our way down and up, nice and slow. So inhale. Just bringing your attention to the front of your body and working your way down. And as you exhale, work your way from the bottom up through your spine. So we're going to go through the six minds two or three times, and we're going to go slow. And we're going to want to hold our breath at the top and the bottom just a little bit, just to be able to feel and listen about the quality of state shift. And this is going to help us in a couple of ways. So make sure you're feeling connected to your body and you're aligned with your posture and you feel ready to really feel something subtle. So take a deep breath, inhale all the way through your eyes, in your face, heart, gut, or belly, your spine, and your sacrum. Exhale, sacrum, spine, belly, heart, face, and eyes. Inhale, feeling your perception, your mirror, your compassion, your intuition, your adaptability, and your aliveness. Exhale, your instinctual self, your adaptability, your intuition, your compassion, your mirroring, and your perception. So we'll go through it, and I won't say as much, but just take a deep breath a couple of times. Go through that. Pause at the top and bottom for as long as is comfortable, and really feel what's shifted. So we'll try that twice. So the only distinction between the two that's very obvious is one feels more horizontal and more connected to what's going on around you, and one feels more vertical or more ready for what's going to happen next. Two sides of a very, very fine coin. But that's the beginning of this process, because we're really trying to tap into what we call self-alignment or coherence, where we can take scattered parts of ourselves and bring them into one sort of track of focus or orientation. So keep playing with that breath in the sense of elevator down, elevator up, or I guess we'll just call it the elevator breath, because that's going to give us a chance to go deeper into the next thing. And there was a couple of questions on discernment, so we're going to go into that in a really tangible way right now. So in meditation practice, the way I was taught, there's a term we call tsan. And that word kind of describes the experience of profound appreciative attention. So what do you really love? Do you love puppies, kittens, babies? Some people really like cars. There's a part of us that just kind of gets all gooey and intuitive, but really highly responsive to what's going on because of a sense of appreciation. You know, there's that kind of like, oh, he's so cute. And there's a real deep softening and a real deep connection to, again, what I would call that horizontal sense of things in that way. But the term tsan also means a decisive evaluation. Like, you know, just before you sign the contract, you've read it through, you've thought it out, your discernment is there. And that's more about kind of negotiating facts or dealing with things that are more instinctual or intense. So those are the two sides of the idea of tsan, and that's what's meant by discernment, is how we connect to things in a very emotional and intuitive and sensual way, and how we respond to things in a very decisive and potentially powerful and conclusive way. So we're going to go through that a bit more experientially. Just wanted to make sure we all could say san and just get a sense that we're dealing with something that's like a lot of ideas from at least China. There's a yin yang to every idea. It's not just this means that. Sun means, you know, a polarity of this and that. Anyway, so let's play with the experience of sun and discernment. So if we stay with our breath, and you don't need to include each of the minds in this, that's just a good way to become coherent. If you get lost, though, or start thinking about Thursday, just go through the elevator mind by mind, because, again, we're looking for coherence. So I've been speaking about discernment in the sense of conscious discernment, visceral discernment, and then instinctual discernment. So we're going to play with that and then some other things. And hopefully I'll get through everything that I'm supposed to do today. Ready? Okay, so stay with your breath, stay with your posture, stay with your coherence, and consider consciousness and the idea of discernment. And the traditional teaching would be meditation can be seen in two ways. We would call yin yang or masculine feminine. In the feminine version, I think naturally of something like ayahuasca, the spirit being we attribute to being the grandmother of all worlds and all minds. If you're not familiar with ayahuasca, just think of Mama Earth or Grandmother Earth. And imagine that you're that being. You're giving birth to all conscious beings and all life and all things with legs and eyes and fins and feathers. And you just can't stop. That's your jam. I'm Grandmother Earth, and I'm going to birth everything to existence that's ever existed through the birth canal of that kind of giving. And also reflect on the awareness that about 98% or so of what Mama Earth has been doing is extinct. So there's a kind of depth of loving appreciation and that kind of, oh, look whatever the life I'm making. But at the same time, there's also a lining on that cloud that may not be so silver. And that is that things keep falling off the edge of evolution. So we can have that profound love for what is and what we're bringing into being, but we can also have a sense of a more empowering kind of love, knowing that all that love will eventually end in the sense of how things come into being and die. So that's a kind of conscious discernment on one side of being. On the other side of being, that discernment would be what we would call Krishna's sort of delusion, where in your meditation practice, instead of feeling like I'm the birth canal of all life and I can embrace all life, all is welcome, I go over to the sword, which says, I will not allow anything to come into my mind, my heart, or my being that is not of service to my intention. And that sounds pretty badass or hard-ass, but that's actually the work. When you decide to get into, I am done with the bullshit, which is, I can embrace why I have the bullshit. I can be compassionate and empathic and intuitive. At the same time, I'm fucking done. Ooh, sorry. Because at some point in mindfulness, we do have to have a kind of discernment that is like a knife, willing to cut through things, to cut away what is no longer serving you or necessary or good for the people around you. So that's conscious discernment, the birth canal of the grandmother of all life, and the sword of decisive, clear thinking, and or just pure perception. So that's hopefully a way of exploring or expressing discernment in the sense of consciousness. So if I was to explore discernment in the sense of being visceral, think of a first date. No one wants to go on a first date, but at the same time, yeah, first dates are first dates. And think about your discernment of the other. And it's kind of visceral because, hey, they might be the one, and I feel all those little sparkly things happening. And they may also be the same kind of person I keep bumping into that seems like the one, and then after months or years, it turns out to be kryptonite. So that's a kind of visceral discernment, because it's going on gut feeling, and it includes the possibility of wow and whoa. And that's, I think, one of the biggest parts of body language and intuition that we have consciously, and for a lot of us, subconsciously. So that would be a way of experiencing and feeling out and hopefully being playful with visceral discernment. And then there's instinctual discernment, which is really down deep. You know, that's like in your sacrum and core. And imagine that you're a parent and your precocious 3 or 4 year old tells you the first real, obvious, blatant lie. If you don't have kids, pretend you have kids, because I can't think of another metaphor right now. So in the one side of the discernment is, what a cute, precocious little monkey or whatever. We have to appreciate them in the sense of, oh, wow, my kid's getting older and learning new adaptations to the world. And on the other side of things, there's a part of you that's going, oh boy, now I really have to be very clear about how communication goes, what attention is, how my face does or doesn't respond to the precociousness of younger people. Because on a very instinctual level, if you're not going to move into more conscious discernment with this young being, the likelihood of things going badly, and badly where you may lose your ability to adapt to what's happening, becomes higher. So hopefully that gives you a sense of discernment with what it's like to be instinctually responsible and responsive, I think. Maybe that's what those feelings are about. Yeah, responsive but responsible. No, that's terrible words, but I mean, honestly, the only words I have for my instinctual self are grr and purr, and that's another story. So so let's walk through that again, and if you're available to it, stay with your breath and posture. Think of the experience of compassion. You could say conscious compassion is somewhere between that grandmother being that gives life to everything and Krishna's sort of delusion, because compassion sits between, oh, that's really cute, and, oh, you're full of crap, or I'm full of crap, or that thought was full of crap. So there's a compassion to that kind of conscious truth. If we go back to our first date and we're sitting across that potential other that may go any number of ways, and we're being with our intuition, we are inevitably going to feel compassion about ourselves and that person, because now we're in this sort of stew pot of projection and angst and expectation, and we don't know where it's going to go, but we can be profoundly compassionate to the moments as they happen. And that's actually a doorway to love. Just the way, you know, that grandmother Krishna orientation to compassion would be a kind of love. When we go instinctual, we think of that lying child, and we're going to sit with that, you know, responsiveness and responsibility. The clear experience is one of compassion, because you're going into the truth and you're being loving to what is instead of just the side you like. And that's a powerful distinction. If we were to think about the play of playing with discernment on the elevator down, and playing with authenticity and autonomy as we come back up through the spine and the eyes and ourselves, that authenticity also arrives just between Grandmother Earth and the Sword of Delusion, because you have to be authentic in the middle of that, and that's an entire presence. It's not just an opinion. The first date. If you're going to be authentic with someone, you're going to be responding to both. You might be the one, and you might be full of crap. right? But there's a loving authenticity to the discovery in the moment and the decisions and the responses, because you don't have to go and look up something in your, hopefully ever on your phone, to figure out how to be on a first date with somebody, because you're actually interested in being there your whole self. Because if you're going to date somebody, I think the best bet you have, if there's a strategy, is to be yourself. Because if they're going to fall in love with your PR department, you're stuck pretending to be somebody else the rest of the relationship. That kind of authenticity, especially with that potentially lying child, is a deeply instinctual and patient, visceral place. You do not want to be screwing around with who's going to respond to that. Because if you do something capricious or something distracting, that becomes a kind of default for you as a person. So hopefully that gives us all a kind of yin-yang sense of discernment. Why with the breath and the elevator breathing exercises in the front and the back connections give us a very, very clear sensual as well as intuitive way of really being orientated to the world, because that's actually what we're training, is we're training our orientation reflex. So just if you're wondering, what are we really doing here? Excuse me. So if we're going to quickly go back to the sitting on the edge of the cliff with our better times twin, and I admit that the twins work better therapeutically than on a Facebook Live meditation adventure, but I'm just hell-bent to make sure we finish that up. So we're sitting on the edge of the cliff. We're about to leap. Your better times twin, your mentor, the person who is you, who's 10 years ahead of you, also... really has some important guidance, and they can answer your questions on the hows very, very specifically anytime you ask. And that's some big mojo if you get into it. Anyway, so before you leap, your better times twin just basically asks you very simply, can you connect your spine to your eyes? Right? Can you be intuitive, instinctual, alive, and present to the next moment? Because if it's your better times twin from the future, the best thing they can show you is how to move towards the future. And that's with your eyes on top of a very adaptive and spine that's good at looking around corners, because that's how we get to the future, right? So the question from your better times twin is, in that state of being true to yourself and true to your eyes, do you know your why? Like, why are you going to jump? Why are you in a hurricane? Why did you just spend all that time in a cave with that, you know, poor person that had such a hard time? Because if you know your why, and the why of your hard times, and the why are moving beyond them and through your hurricanes and ready to jump off of a cliff, it's because you're with your why. Some people call that your passion, but I'm not sure that's a really great way to put it. So that's question number one. In state, can you connect to your why? And can you connect and be with your pain from the inside out? Because if you can do those two things, you can leap. Now, when we leap, the imaging practice goes into the hurricane. The hurricane's really crowded with all kinds of things. And you're either going to fall through the hurricane and hit bottom, which I'll speak to quickly, or you're going to grab onto a big funny road sign and try and miss the cows. Because even if you've leapt into your passion, your future, your why, you've let go of your past and you can be with your pain, you're still going to have to navigate things. So you might as well do it in a playful way. And the idea of surfing brings up kind of a similar thing to sailing, where you have to still balance how you steer. You know, you have to have a good keel to be able to feel the wind and guide yourself. So that just sort of reminds us, even if you feel like, woohoo, I finally made it, I'm going to just go for it all, you still have to navigate your life, or what I say, grab your life by the wheel. And that's a tangible, sensual experience, not just an idea. So we're jumping off of cliffs, we're going into caves, we're walking through hurricanes to get to the eye of a hurricane. And the leaping metaphor is honestly just about not going back. although you can always go back to your cave, back to your hurricane, back to any of the practices that we've done. But we do want to have a sense of permission and commitment. Okay, I'm going to make this decision and I'm just going to leave. Especially when that comes to addiction. It's not going back. And hitting bottom as a metaphor, we've probably all heard it, especially with respect to addiction, is about getting up again. But more importantly, in a big way, hitting bottom is about adaptive exhaustion. People burn out in the sense of addiction hitting bottom when the adaptation that made the addiction sort of work stops working. And that's a tough one, and we talk about that when we talk about the three whys of addiction, that the first why is recognizing and having compassion for why you've made that adaptation. So when we decide to take our empowerment some steps further and start jumping off of cliffs and working out our past, truly letting go, we can come to the experience of that adaptation is no longer working without having to destroy any more of our lives and our relationships. Because that's all that hitting bottom asks you to do, is just shake yourself off and go, that is no longer working in the way that I was hoping it was working. And that's a hard thing with addiction, to accept that, but that's the real step, is can you accept yourself? So a couple of more quick things, and I'm going to be late. The next part of our Qigong practice we're going to get into tomorrow, and the next thing we're going to do with our breath work, is very precise to being in the sunlight. Now, if you're not actually outside, you can do it with a window. I've got a window right here. In fact, I did this practice when I was in my bed. I just got up and sat on the side of the bed this morning and did it with my imagination. So you don't actually have to be looking at the sun. But if you are going to try this, especially this spring with the way the spring is springing, doing this for a few minutes every day outside is going to change everything. And it's basically doing the elevator breath or the discernment and authenticity breath outside with all of the tortoise breathing, all of the contractions, all of the rocking, which we're going to review in detail first thing tomorrow, is to be able to open your eyes, inhale some sunlight, close your eyes, go through your whole elevator, your six minds down and back up. And then as you come back out of your eyes, you're going to open your eyes and look at the horizon and begin to have the feeling that you're actually emitting kind of light out of your eyes. Because for the next little while, we're going to be training more deeply with the breath work to begin shifting our state in a more potent way. And we have to be very careful with this, because you can fall down, bang your head, you can hallucinate and take things really literally, and or become kind of addicted to another way to trip out. So we want to move on, on this very, very precisely. But that's the next thing, is to do your breath and feel the sun and the sunlight being drawn into yourself and then being made coherent and then coming back and out of yourself. Pardon me. And I think that's everything for today that I wanted to make sure we caught up on. Keep in mind that the cold showers, if you're doing them, are now 2 minutes, and you're either doing your releasing breath for the 2 minutes, which I find incredibly powerful as a way to start your day. And if you want to be a spiritual badass, if you're in the shower, then do the transformational breath, where you go and reach, embrace, transform and release and return to the source, or return to yourself. And if you can do that for 2 minutes in the shower, I'll buy you lunch. Okay, so see you all in the morning tomorrow. We're going to do some Qigong. We're going to review the breathing in much more detail, and then we're actually going to do a practice specific to the whole kelp ocean and wine thing, so we can really get that yin yang embodiment worked out. So thanks for sticking out for a few extra minutes. And glad we got to be really precise with discernment, because that's why we're here, folks. All right. See you in the morning tomorrow. Blessings to you all. Have a great Thursday. Stay out of trouble. No, wait. When you're in trouble, you have the most fun. Have the most fun.